upon him at the third call, and considered his shoulder her throne, his arm her refuge, his gifts treasures of surpassing worth. Gentlemen are sometimes seized with sudden fits of admiration for the young relatives of ladies whom they honour with their regard. But this counterfeit philoprogenitiveness sits uneasily upon them, and does not deceive anybody a particle. Mr. Bear's devotion was sincere, however likewise effective, for honesty is the best policy in love as in law. He was one of the men who were at home with children, and looked particularly well when little faces made a pleasant contrast with his manly one. His business, whatever it was, detained him from day to day, but evening seldom failed to bring him out to see... Well, he always asked for Mr. March, so I suppose he was the attraction. The excellent papa laboured under the delusion that he was, and revelled in long discussions with the kindred spirit, till a chance remark of his more observing grandson suddenly enlightened him. Mr. Bear came in one evening to pause on the threshold of the study, astonished by the spectacle that met his eye. Prone upon the floor lay Mr. March, with his respectable legs in the air, and beside him, likewise prone, was Demi, trying to imitate the attitude with his own short, scarlet-stockinged legs, both grovellers so seriously absorbed that they were unconscious of spectators, till Mr. Bear laughed his sonorous laugh, and Joe cried out with a scandalized face, "Father! Father, here's the professor!" Down went the black legs and up came the grey head, as the preceptor said with undisturbed dignity, "Good evening, Mr. Bear. Excuse me for a moment. We are just finishing our lesson. Now, Demi, make the letter and tell its name." "I knows him!" And after a few convulsive efforts, the red legs took the shape of a pair of compasses, and the intelligent pupil triumphantly shouted, "It's a wee, Grandpa! It's a wee!" "He's a born Weller," laughed Jo, as her parent gathered himself up, and her nephew tried to stand on his head, as the only mode of expressing his satisfaction that school was over. "What have you been at today, Bubchen?" asked Mr. Bear, picking up the gymnast.
"Me went to see little Mary."
"And what did you there?"
"I kissed her," began Demi, with artless frankness.
"Prut, thou beginnest early. What did the little Mary say to that?" asked Mr. Bear, continuing to confess the young sinner, who stood upon his knee, exploring the waistcoat pocket.
"Oh, she liked it, and she kissed me, and I liked it." "Don't little boys like little girls?" added Demi, with his mouth full and an air of bland satisfaction.
"You precious chick! Who put that into your head?" said Joe, enjoying the innocent revelation as much as the professor.
"'Tisn't in mine head. It's in my mouth," answered literal Demi, putting out his tongue with a chocolate drop on it, thinking she alluded to confectionery, not ideas.
"Thou shouldst save some for the little friend. Sweets to the sweet, manling."
And Mr. Bear offered Jo some, with a look that made her wonder if chocolate was not the nectar drunk by the gods. Demi also saw the smile, was impressed by it, and artlessly inquired,
"Do great boys like great girls too, Fesser?"
Like young Washington, Mr. Bear couldn't tell a lie, so he gave the somewhat vague reply that he believed they did sometimes, in a tone that made Mr. March put down his clothes-brush, glance at Joe's retiring face, and then sink into his chair, looking as if the precocious chick had put an idea into his head that was both sweet and sour. Why Dodo, when she caught him in the china closet half an hour afterward, nearly squeezed the breath out of his little body with a tender embrace instead of shaking him for being there, and why she followed up this novel performance by the unexpected gift of a big slice of bread and jelly, remained one of the problems over which Demi puzzled his small wits, and was forced to leave unsolved forever. Chapter 46. Under the Umbrella. While Laurie and Amy were taking conjugal strolls over velvet carpets, as they set their house in order and planned a blissful future, Mr. Bear and Joe were enjoying promenades of a different sort, along muddy roads and sodden fields. "I always do take a walk toward evening, and I don't know why I should give it up, just because I often happen to meet the professor on his way out," said Joe to herself, after two or three encounters. For though there were two paths to Meg's, whichever one she took, she was sure to meet him, either going or returning. He was always walking rapidly, and never seemed to see her till quite close, when he would look as if his short-sighted eyes had failed to recognize the approaching lady till that moment. Then, if she was going to Meg's, he always had something for the babies. If her face was turned homeward, he had merely strolled down to see the river, and was just about returning, unless they were tired of his frequent calls. Under the circumstances, what could Joe do but greet him civilly and invite him in? If she was tired of his visits, she concealed her weariness with perfect skill, and took care that there should be coffee for supper, as Mr. Bear, doesn't like tea. By the second week, everyone knew perfectly well what was going on, yet everyone tried to look as if they were stone blind to the changes in Joe's face. They never asked why she sang about her work, did up her hair three times a day, and got so blooming with her evening exercise. And no one seemed to have the slightest suspicion that Professor Bear, while talking philosophy with the father, was giving the daughter lessons in love. Joe couldn't even lose her heart in a decorous manner, but sternly tried to quench her feelings, and failing to do so, led a somewhat agitated life. She was mortally afraid of being laughed at for surrendering, after her many and vehement declarations of independence. Laurie was her especial dread, but thanks to the new manager, he behaved with praiseworthy propriety, never called Mr. Bear a capital old fellow in public, never alluded in the remotest manner to Joe's improved appearance, or expressed the least surprise at seeing the professor's hat on the Marches' hall table nearly every evening. But he exulted in private, and longed for the time to come when he could give Joe a piece of plate with a bear and a ragged staff on it as an appropriate coat of arms. For a fortnight the professor came and went with lover-like regularity. Then he stayed away for three whole days, and made no sign, a proceeding which caused everybody to look sober, and Joe to become pensive at first, and then, alas for romance, very cross. "Disgusted, I dare say, and gone home as suddenly as he came. It's nothing to me, of course. But I should think he would have come and bid us good-bye like a gentleman," she said to herself, with a despairing look at the gate, as she put on her things for the customary walk one dull afternoon. "You'd better take the little umbrella, dear. It looks like rain," said her mother, observing that she had on her new bonnet, but not alluding to the fact. "Yes, Marmy, do you want anything in town? I've got to run in and get some paper," returned Joe, pulling out the bow under her chin before the glass as an excuse for not looking at her mother. "Yes, I want some twilled silesia, a paper of No. 9 needles, and 2 yards of narrow lavender ribbon. Have you got your thick boots on, and something warm under your cloak?" "I believe so," answered Joe absently. "If you happen to meet Mr. Bear, bring him home to tea. I quite long to see the dear man," added Mrs. March. Joe heard that, but made no answer, except to kiss her mother and walk rapidly away, thinking with a glow of gratitude, in spite of her heartache, "How good she is to me! What do girls do who haven't any mothers to help them through their troubles?" The dry goods stores were not down among the counting houses, banks, and wholesale warerooms, where gentlemen most do congregate, but Jo found herself in that part of the city before she did a single errand, loitering along as if waiting for someone,
examining engineering instruments in one window and samples of wool in another, with most unfeminine interest.